only criticize constructively and never destructively. I think that we ought to let politics go for a while and back up the president.
Can you let politics go, Admiral Byrd, in a democracy?
Only in time of a crisis. And I seem to be about the only one who thinks that there's a crisis going on. And we ought to let them go for a while until we stop going down the hill towards communism. Because it's difficult for the president to stop this socialistic wagon. We great momentum to stop it, put the brakes on, go back up on up the hill towards our way of life. So he's having a very tough job on that. You see, the complexity makes for socialism. And that's the tendency of the world, the trend of things from the environment we ourselves have created. And therefore, we should fight for our way of life, which is in danger, and that's the crisis.
Oh, Admiral Byrd, what answer do you give to people? You must come across this all the time. I do. What answer do you give to people who say that the matter about which you're speaking is entirely compatible with socialism? The brotherhood of man and socialism can go along together.
Well, my fear about socialism is that it may be a prelude to communism.
Well, that's a good answer. It's clear, and I think it's good, and I think it's sound.
It very likely may be, because it's a centralization of power. And the centralization of power, it goes on every day here. More and more power, due to the nature of our situation and environment, more and more power in the central government, federal, and also local and state, and slowly chipping away man's rights.
And there can be nothing of the freedom you mentioned in communism or any form of communism.
A dictatorship that's benevolent is a in the nature of things, almost an impossibility. It is an impossibility, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Because when you get a dictator, people are going to take things in their own hands. They're built that way. We're still selfish. And the only way the dictator can stop trouble is to be very rough and ruthless. You see.
Real
strong
arm method.
He's got to shoot people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they do that. They got to come to that. And benevolence isn't possible. If we could have benevolent dictatorship, it would be wonderful. But that's what the divine being is benevolence. Benevolent situation anywhere, where the divine being. It's persuasive. I think the intelligence that pervades the universe, what it has to do with us, is persuasive rather than coercive.
Yeah. Admiral Byrd, I'm sure that while you're speaking, there must be a good many people in this listening audience who are saying to themselves right now, who agree with you that there is a crisis, and who certainly agree with you that our human relations have not kept up with our technological advances. There must be a good many people saying to themselves, well, what can I personally do about this? What can I as an individual do to help bring our human relations up to on a par with our technological advances?
They should keep themselves informed as much as possible. Should read the papers. It has to be done consecutively. You can't read sporadically and expect to know what's going on. And keep well informed. Then you will know, you'll have a chance to know what's going on behind the scenes, whereas the audience generally, the public, sees the great stage of life and don't realize what's going on. It's quite a different thing, as a rule. To keep informed and to ask questions and realize that you cannot have liberty without paying a price for it. And most people are not paying a price.
Most people are not paying a price?
Not paying much of a price for it. They've got to take part in the whole business. Each person is important. If all of them get together and study and ask questions and know what's going on, they can vote intelligently. Because in the ultimate analysis, we are completely responsible for what happens where the government is concerned. they make mistakes, it's our fault. We're not taking enough interest in taking the wonderful freedom we have seriously enough. You know, we didn't know we were going to get on this subject, did we?
No, we didn't. Mm-hmm. No, this is one of those...
I'm glad to talk about it, though.
One of those...
I'm deeply interested,
I know
as you can
are.
See.
I know. Yeah. It all started when I asked you why you work so hard.
Yeah, well, I do
that. You've
given
a good answer to that question, because anybody with your convictions and moral integrity enough to back up convictions is going to be busy.
Well, manifestly, what we need is not only unity, as we see it. We need more than that. We need integration. And I think that we ought to help the president to get it all we can. Integration, national and international.
Now, you've been doing some work with moral rearmament.
Yes, there are about 4,000 members of the moral rearmament group who are working all over the world unselfishly to get unity. And take the airlines. Now, they have helped a whole lot there to get unity. And I have made talks where the labor leader and the management leader... We're sitting at the same table, talking things over in a friendly fashion. And they meet once a week to talk things over. I've given a number of talks to them, and I had 2,500 people the last one, where the management and labor all sat together in the audience, the members of them. So it can be done. That proves it can be done in spite of our selfishness. Because groups can be unselfish where the individual has a difficult time being. Unselfish due to what's been evolved within him.
Would you say that the airline companies are kind of pioneers in this new way of dealing with their labor relations?
Well, there are a great many pioneers. They're more than the airlines. But that's such a striking example of it. Now, Mr. Arnold, or the Arnold Bakers, you're going to talk about later. he's doing the same sort of thing within his organization.
At the Arnold Bakeries.
Yeah. And then he's working in the community, and he works as hard on community matters as he does at the in the company that he runs.
I think you
now,
might...
that's a grand thing, you see. Because that's community. It's showing how to get coordination and showing brotherhood of man. Mm-hmm. Within the community.
I think, Admiral Byrd, for the benefit of people who haven't read too much or heard too much about MRA, you might tell them a little bit about it, what it stands for in more detail, would you?
Well, there are a lot of people who, these 4,000 that are working now, approximately.
Say we, it was just you. That's an editorial we.
It's an editorial we.
Because there was no we. There was just
no we. That's
Admiral
right.
Richard E. Byrd for 5 months.
That's right, you caught that one.
Well, then I've never forgotten. You said that you didn't dare go very far away from the shack because you would be lost in a matter of a few yards.
You could easily
really.
Get lost.
Because it all looked the same. There were no landmarks.
No.
Just
no
snow.
No landmarks. 800 feet of snow under us.
800 feet deep.
And you had to watch crevasses, too. And I did get lost once, but I waited till the clouds went away so I could see the stars and got back by the Southern Cross. Can you imagine that? It's in the sky, a cross in the sky, which... Down south, we use the North Pole Star up north, the North Star.
To navigate by. Mm-hmm. But you, just alone on your 2 feet, could navigate by the Southern Cross and get back to the shack?
Well, I managed to get back, that way.
You said that often?
Because I knew where it was supposed to be at the time. A little complicated. I'd take a few steps and mark where I'd come from. Mark the steps so I could go back if I was wrong. And kept on that way until I found the shack again. Well, I saw the pole sticking up. There's no shack because it's all covered with snow.
The shack was entirely buried, wasn't it?
Entirely, yeah. several feet under.
Several feet of snow on top of it. Mm. But there was a little pole sticking up.
The scientific instruments.
That's what you had to go out to inspect.
Mm-hmm.
On your roof.
That's right.
Admiral Byrd, you also, I remember reading in your book, Alone, you nearly lost your life down there, too, and not from the elements outside, but from that miserable little stove you had inside.
That's right.
A story that always made me kind of sick. After you'd gone through all you'd gone through and had risked your life against the elements to have... You were nearly... killed, nearly died from the gas escaping from that little stove.
That was from carbon monoxide from the faulty burner of this stove. We expected to get coal out there, but we couldn't transport it that far. The season was late and there were bad pressure ridges. So I took an improvised oil stove, and the burner got faulty, and so I was poisoned. Slowly by carbon monoxide and got quite ill. It was a little tough from then on.
That was a long 5 months.
Yeah, that's right. It was a long five months.
Now, you're going to the South Pole again.
Yeah, I'm trying to go. I've announced that I'm planning an expedition. And when I can get the equipment together, I'm going back.
Is it all right if I ask why?
Sure. There's an area down there as large as the United States that no human being has ever looked upon. And that seems incredible, doesn't it?
Yes.
There's an area that big that nobody's ever seen in this world.
You didn't see any of it when you were there?
Well, I looked into it. I got into some of it, but there's still left. I went beyond the pole last time, looked into this vast area. But I've never been able to, and I've gotten around... I've taken some of it off the map, some of the unknown, but there's still that much left. It's all in one piece. Now, why do I go back at all? It's an untouched reservoir of natural resources, which this country and the world will need desperately, because we are recklessly expending our natural resources. And it won't be many years before we will be, I repeat, in desperate need of that those minerals that are there. For example, there's uranium there. There's unlimited coal. I'm sure there's oil and so forth. And I'm looking into the future, thinking of those, of our children, grandchildren.
Admiral Byrd, to get these things, do you have to go under 800 feet of snow and then begin digging?
Well, the coal, for example, is seam in the mountains, the high mountains, that the snow doesn't stick to it.
Oh.
So there you can see a great seam. A very long seam that the snow doesn't cover.
Are you anxious to go back?
Very.
You are.
It's a big kick, you know, to find.
You want to go to the strangest places, if I may say so.
When you find a mountain range, say 20,000 feet high, 1,000 miles long, well, that's quite a kick, you know. And you do find such things every time you explore.
Will you fly down?
The ships will go down. I may fly down, but there'll be some ships there with supplies for the planes.
Do you still do a good deal of flying?
I don't do very much now because I'm doing administrative work.
Would you rather fly?
Of course,
fly
on these expeditions, I navigate and take the wheel as co-pilot of it. I have to navigate that.
Would you rather fly a little more and do a little less desk work? Between you and me?
Very much, yeah.
Because you like flying.
And I don't like desk work.
And you don't like desk work?
I have to do a lot of it, it's the same. No, I don't like to push a pin around. I feel like I'm just pushing peanuts. About all you do.
It's been a... simply wonderful to have you back on the Martha Dean program, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate your coming. And I hope to, you know, wish you all kinds of right from the heart, great success with the expedition to the South Pole and with your work with frozen bread for the Arnold Bakeries and with everything you're doing.
Oh, thank you.